Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 102. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And we are kicking off our Chalice of the Gods discussion.
Woohoo!
We have paused the Red Pyramid so that we can dive into Percy Jackson and the Olympians number 6. It still feels wrong to call it that.
Is that technically what it is?
I mean, even Rick has been calling it that.
I mean, I guess it's on the cover and everything.
Yeah, I don't like it, but
like, it's
I will
its own series.
Accept
I know it. I know it comes next, but it's its own series at this point.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Rick?
But, you know, it's fine. I guess we'll let him call it that if he wants to.
If that's what he wants.
Yeah. If you would like to complain about Percy Jackson number 6 not being a thing, or definitely being a thing, you can contact us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. We have a little bit of news this week. First and foremost, happy birthday to Leah Jeffries, who turned 14 on September 25th. Next day, Chalice of the Gods comes out. That's a great birthday present.
I mean, yes, it is.
It's pretty wonderful. So that's really awesome. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's 14 already.
Right.
It's just wild, but, you know, it happens. In a little bit of a downer news, but not really, Roseanne A. Brown tweeted the other day, "Well, I've officially downloaded my data and will be phasing out this account on Twitter over the next few days. I really hate this because Twitter truly changed my life, but there's really no other choice at this point." And she had tweeted an article out the other day about the amount of information that Twitter is getting from people and how kind of scary it is, because I think they're changing their policies and just some of that stuff. And she was like, yeah, don't like that, gonna move away from Twitter. And I asked her where else she might be going, because I mean, I feel like both of us are diehard Twitter fans, or we were before.
It's so funny because when it first came out, I hated Twitter.
Really?
I thought it was so stupid. I was like, it's a bunch of Facebook update, like, status updates. That's all it is. Why is it? I became obsessed with Twitter.
Yeah.
It's like, it was my most used social media for the longest time.
Yeah.
Just because it was so easy to figure out what the latest news or whatever was going on.
That's why I liked it. It was very, like, in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have, like, an in-the-moment dialogue with people or, get updates and stuff. And especially when you're covering shows and stuff like that, and people are live tweeting, like, that was, that became ingrained into just my daily life. And so the idea of stepping away from Twitter is, like, really strange to me, because we built our biggest platform on Twitter, and there's a huge community there that I feel close to and that we interact with a lot. And it just, like, but I'm getting to the point, like, the whole X thing was one thing, and Elon and all of that, like, it's been annoying me a little bit for a while now, but I feel like, especially if they start charging to use Twitter, I'm out. Like,
I'm not paying for X.
Yeah.
I might have paid for Twitter in its heyday. Like, when it was the really great, fun, like, I may have paid a couple of dollars a month because it was such a good platform and everything was working, and no, there is no possible way I'm paying for it now.
Yeah. So, we're gonna try being the operative word, to build up a little bit more on Instagram, because I feel like Instagram is a good platform for us. It's kind of the next best thing. We're currently also looking to, like, we still have our Threads account. I'm gonna kind of check out Blue Sky at some point. So we might be moving around a little bit. You can definitely still find us on Twitter right now.
Yep.
And you can definitely find us on Instagram if you want to check us out there.
And if it's slightly out of date, it's because Kristen has been slacking. That's just to be known, okay? I, for some reason, Instagram and I are just not simpatico.
It's,
I have trouble figuring, like, I'm not that old. I swear. It's not that I can't figure it out. It's that for some reason it's not as user-friendly for me.
Yeah.
So, like, things are not where I am used to finding them or not where I can find them.
I also think it takes a little bit more effort because it's so image-based. And yeah. You have to, like, take a picture or download a picture and upload it and, like, figure out, like, how to caption it and stuff yeah. like that. And there are things, like, I really like the way that tags work on Instagram because I think people follow those a lot more than they do on Twitter in some cases. But, like, Twitter is just, you know, we're primarily writers. Like, it's yeah. easy to just write what you're feeling and not really have to, like, figure out what picture you need to go with it. Yep. So, we're going to be trying. All of this is to say that Rosie said, starting from the 29th, she will be primarily over on Instagram. Her account on Twitter will still exist so that no one can steal the handle and impersonate her, but she will not be using it, so...
And, I mean, who knows? If Elon gets smart and sells it to someone who doesn't hate us, maybe it'll come back. Maybe it'll make a resurgence and not be terrible. But I'm not counting on it. I just wish.
Yeah. So, we'll see how Instagram goes. If anybody has any tips and tricks for us old ladies who has struggled with Instagram, let us know.
Like, this definitely was, like, in its heyday while I was still really young. Because Instagram is not, like, new. It's yeah. been around forever.
Yeah.
But I just am not a picture person.
Like, I like Instagram. Usually I wait until I have something meaningful to upload versus trying to do something, like, every day or every other day.
Like, I think my personal Instagram has, like, 3 pictures on it.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. I'm terrible, yeah. I tell you.
But we will try to get better
yeah.
because I think Instagram could have... I know it has a really cool Percy Jackson community, and a yeah. lot of the artists are over there, and we love them, so...
Definitely.
We'll be trying our best. Mark of Athena graphic novel is on sale now. That also came out on September 26th. Definitely forgot about this amidst yeah. all of the Chalice of the Gods stuff.
Yeah, so did I.
So I'm pretty sure Stephanie Lurie tweeted this out, and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. It did come out. It was supposed to come out the same day. So if you really want that graphic novel, you can pick it up now. I also definitely wanted to mention that Khadija Khatib, who did the UK cover for Chalice of the Gods and the cover for Daughter of the Deep, has new covers for Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the UK version, the original series, and
my first one is...
I'm kind of obsessed. Like... I really like these, and so she posted, like, the actual image with just Percy Jackson and the Olympians by Rick Riordan. I've seen the actual covers, and I even saw the second one. I can't remember what it looks like right now, but this one has, like, a neon green border and spine, and that is my favorite color, and I immediately was like, just, it's so colorful, like, even the, like, teal turquoise Percy Jackson, and how dynamic the whole image looks, these look fantastic.
Yeah, no, the Lightning Thief, it's yeah. freaking gorgeous, like... Yeah.
And those, so cool. especially with the spines lined up with all the bright colors, like, I think the second one's yellow or orange. I think it's yellow. And it just looks really good. So, gonna have to figure out how to add that to my list now. We're complaining, but we're very excited.
Just all
yeah. I will link to that one that she posted, but keep your eyes out elsewhere, and if I can, I'll look around and see, because some people already had the actual copies, so they might be out already.
The tweet that you linked, when I kind of scrolled down through some of the responses, it says it's already out.
Oh, really?
Okay. I think it's, yeah, like one of the responses was, it's already out, so it must be for sale already.
Okay, so I just went to Waterstones, which is where I ordered my signed copy of Chalice of the Gods, the UK version, and they have this for £9. This looks to be the paperback version, but you can see it there, and then I'm sure the other ones will be here. Oh, yep, here we go. So Sea of Monsters, okay, Sea of Monsters is pink, and it has the Cyclops. We've got... Titan's Curse is yellow with Blackjack. That is the... Those are the only ones I'm seeing right now in that order. So I wonder if the other ones aren't quite out yet. But the first three are.
Oh, jeez.
So you can definitely get them. They're £9 each. Which I feel like is... Those are the paperback, though. Do they have... See, I want to know if they have the hardcover, because I would prefer the hardcover.
Like, I would assume they've got to be putting them
View on other formats and editions.
And a trick I learned from someone on, I believe, TikTok, I'm pretty sure. If you are thinking about buying, like, this from Waterstones, like, if you're in the States and you want to order something from Waterstones, maybe look ahead and see if there's anything coming out in the next, like, year or so that you would also want, like, a special Waterstones copy of or any UK covers. Because if you, whatever you order, even if it's a pre-order, they only charge you shipping once. So you'll only have to pay the UK to US shipping once.
Oh.
And they'll send you the pre-orders as they come out.
Really?
Because this is what I did. I wanted the Waterstones copy of Fall of Wrath and Ruin, which is by Jen Armentrout.
Right.
And I also wanted A Chalice of the Gods because I was like, I have to have that cover. Like, it's pretty. And so I ordered them both, pre-ordered them both. They sent me Fall of Wrath and Ruin. I got that like 2 weeks ago, and my Chalice of the Gods is on its way now.
Oh.
So if you want to save yourself a little money, put all your pre-orders in at once and you'll only have to pay shipping once.
That is a useful tip.
It was a book talk tip, man.
Yeah.
They always know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
So just in case you're looking at this and going, ugh, it costs like $15 to ship, and there is a way to make it a little more worth your while if you're really like going to do it and you just have to decide how, it's one way to kind of save a buck.
Okay, speaking of Chalice of the Gods, it is out now in the world. The Chalice of the Gods Barnes & Noble exclusive edition has the recommendation letters, or at least one recommendation letter in the back. Does it have all of them?
I have not. I've been trying to avoid actually touching
it. Don't read it.
Well, I'm trying not to read it. Mine are, like, stuck.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. I can peel it. Okay.
I can look at it if you want me to.
Oh, yeah, that might actually work, because I don't know anything. And I've been trying not to look. I'm guessing it's only one, because isn't the... Like, again, I haven't read the book, but...
Huh. Okay. I'm not going to say what this is.
Okay.
But I am surprised by what it is.
It's a little spoilery?
I'm just confused as to what is actually going on with these. There are three recommendation letters...
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised by who wrote them. That's all I'm saying.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to stick these back to the inside of the back cover and not look at them again until I finish this book in approximately a million weeks.
Yes. So that is the Barnes & Noble exclusive edition. If you order it from the website, you apparently don't get the sticker, which I'm very disappointed by because I wanted that sticker. But if you go to Barnes & Noble, maybe that was just day of... But
I was there day of, and they didn't have any, like, special displays for them or anything. They were just in the youth section on the shelf next to all the other Percy books. I was very disappointed.
Yeah.
I fully expected a table, and there was no table in maybe but I didn't even look to see if there was, like, a sticker in it or if maybe they give it to you at the register.
Because I know one person only got a sticker. Like, it's a big Camp Half-Blood sticker. And then somebody else got, like, a sticker, a crossword puzzle, like, a couple other different things. And I have a feeling that they, like, maybe gave them to you at the register or it was part of, like, a bigger celebration kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tony on Instagram DM'd us and was like, hey, I had, like, 50 pages missing from the middle of my Barnes & Noble copy.
Ooh.
And I was like, are you kidding? And they said that they had no problem returning it and getting the right copy. Hadn't even left Barnes & Noble yet, so, like, didn't even have to go home and come back. And I haven't seen any other people with this issue, so maybe that was just, like, a total fluke. But if you are getting your book from Barnes & Noble, just check.
Yeah.
I think it was around the 130-page mark. It was, like, 130 to 150 or something like that was missing. And...
I looked, but I'm double-checking because...
Yeah.
I should be fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So...
Ooh, phew.
Yeah. Just in case. Maybe that was literally... Maybe they should have kept that book. That could have been...
I was gonna say...
Super special.
I mean, it might end up being one of those fluke copies.
Yeah.
You know.
Like when you get like a penny with a mistake, a printing mistake on it, and it's worth like $1 million. Gave up $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
The Chalice of the Gods book tour is underway, and it seems to be going off fantastically. Everybody's having a lot of fun. There was a digital stop for Seattle, and a lot of people attended that. We did get some news out of that. We found out what Brick's next book is, and it is the sequel to Chalice of the Gods called Wrath of the Triple Goddess,
nice.
Which I believe is a reference to Hecate. Yeah. So that'll be very interesting. And Mrs. O'Leary is going to pop up in that book.
Nice.
So that is very cool.
We do love Mrs. O'Leary. Yeah.
I haven't delved too far into the rest of the information coming out of the book tour because I will be attending the Chicago stop. By the time you listen to this, that will already have been
Karen over. Will already have gone.
Yes. Yes. So I will be at the Chicago stop, and I will be interviewing Rick on Saturday. I have about 15 minutes with him, and I've been asking people on Twitter to give me questions, and I talked to some of the other podcasters, and they've given me a couple of questions as well, so I'll be sure to split that up into, like, non-spoilery and spoilery questions, and I think that'll be really fun. I'm super excited about that. Super glad that I get to interview him again. That should be a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and then we'll do, next week, we'll make sure we do the Chalice of the Gods book tour wrap-up with the Chicago stop specifically, so I'll give you specific information out of that stop.
Sounds good.
And now we are introducing a new section, a new subsection of the news called Kristen's Corner, because this just feels so appropriate to hand the reins over to her to give us a couple of updates.
I mean, yeah, first, let's start with Survivor.
Yeah.
It aired.
Of course.
I mean, when we're recording this, the first episode of Survivor just aired yesterday, and we got to see Jay Maya off to a really solid start.
Yes.
I am really excited about how she's doing so far. As a Survivor fan of many years, I'm very encouraged because she seems to be relating to people really well. They didn't do a lot of time on her. Like, they didn't, like, focus on her, which is good news.
Yeah.
Especially at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
It just means that she's in the middle, she's cruising along, and nobody is upset with her, nobody's talking about her. Right now, that's where you want to be,
uh-huh.
Especially for these first couple weeks. And as a tribe, like, right now they're in the tribe part of the game, where they're in three separate tribes, you compete as a tribe, you're looking for tribal immunity. So right now, keeping your head down and just winning the challenges and not going to tribal council is the name of the game.
Yeah.
And her tribe is awesome.
Yeah.
Their name is Reba, which I love the little song that Jay did on her Twitter. So good. So good. It's the Reba theme song from the TV show, and I freaking loved that show. So it made me really happy that she was, like, all about it, because it's so great. I'm excited to see her, like, switch into game mode in a couple of weeks here. Mm. Even if her team keeps winning, which they look like they're in a good position to continue winning for a while. But even with that, there will be game popping up. There's a couple people on her tribe who are, like, into the idol hunt thing. And so seeing how that evolves and how all of that kind of goes on is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Not to mention, this is only the first episode and we've already had, like, three twists.
Yeah.
So you just really never know. Like, they've been doing this thing every year. Like, there's a first challenge that somebody wins and they get their supplies, and then they do I forget what they called it, but it's basically like strength versus smarts kind of challenge.
It was sweaty and savvy.
Like, they've been doing this now where you can choose between the two, and as long as you complete it in the time allotted, you win, or as long as you get it right on the savvy part, you win. This is the first year that you could fail.
Mm.
And they both failed, which was crazy. But yeah, so, like, we've already had some little minor twists here and there. I like that they actually did the marooning this year. They haven't dropped them off from a boat and had them paddle into shore in a while. They've just been showing them kind of, like, arriving on the beach. And, like, the marooning was always a big part of it because you could, like, gather supplies from the ship you were on and take it with you and kind of start with that. They didn't really get to do the supplies thing, but they did have to get in their little canoes and paddle themselves to shore. So it's like a pseudo mourning.
Yeah.
Which was always a really fun part of the show. Like, just to see them kind of all go chaos and everything. Yeah.
I do remember the supplies thing now that you're mentioning.
Yeah.
That,
like they'd run around and untie fruits and tools and whatever, and there was always like a clue hidden on the boat. Oh. So someone would find a clue to a hidden immunity idol, and I always loved the mourning. So they haven't done it in a while. So this was kind of a little bit of a nudge toward that. Yeah. But we are officially in 90-minute episodes this year.
Oh, all of them are?
I think so.
Wow.
I know that's what they're doing for Amazing Race.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I saw that the first one was supposed to be 90, but I haven't seen anything saying that they're not all going to be.
Okay.
So I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure we're doing 90-minute episodes, which honestly I think is going to be so much fun. Mm-hmm. They're going to be able to actually put in more gameplay because they have to hit the challenges, they have to hit the time with Jeff, they have to hit all these other things. So I'm very excited that she's doing so well and just kind of cruising under the radar. And she's knocking it out of the park so far.
I have to say, like I said, I think it was last week, I have watched several seasons of Survivor and I've definitely gotten into it. I was like pumping my fists and like going, come on, you can do it, like yelling at the TV and stuff.
She's like crawling through the mud and I'm like, go.
And my boyfriend is just sitting next to me laughing because I don't think he's seen me that into Survivor before. But it's just like, I feel like, you know, this camaraderie with her because she was on the podcast and I just think she's really talented as a singer and she's such a great person and she's so smart. And it's just really fun to have somebody that you're really rooting for.
Oh, yeah.
And, I'm super excited and I'm glad that we can do these little updates. I hope she lasts a good long while.
Same here. Like, I've had people I've been really excited to watch play before, usually because they're either from my hometown, from Toledo, or they're, like, a former player that I was really excited to see play again, or, like, something like that. I've never, like, known anybody.
Yeah.
This is the first person that I don't really know Jay, but we've talked to her. We've had, you know. So it's just really, really exciting.
Yeah.
And, it just amps up the cool factor just a little bit more.
Yeah.
We'll keep you up to date with how she's doing, and hopefully she'll go very, 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 very far and or win this thing.
Yeah. Because
I totally think she can.
So do I.
Okay, the other part of Kristen's Corner this week is the strike update. We've been giving you these for quite a bit. And there's some really good news this time. Yeah. I'm pretty sure you've probably all seen it, but the WGA and the AMPTP have reached an agreement. It's been ratified by the membership. They have officially gone back to work. So the writers are officially back on the clock writing all the scripted series, probably for release in January, February, March is my guess. Because in order to save the 2023-2024 TV season, they had to have a deal by October 1st. So because the writers have a deal, at least they can start writing episodes and figuring out what the second half of this TV season is going to look like and, you know, what shows will come back, which ones will probably wait till next fall, you know, that sort of thing. But I'm just really, really excited that they're all back at work. There's not a ton of news regarding the SAG-AFTRA strike, except that they are going to be hitting the table with the AMPTP next week. When you guys hear this, they will have already started talking.
Right.
Because they're going to get together on Monday, October 2nd, that they're, like, meeting, going back to the table for the first time in a while. They haven't really been negotiating. They've just been seeing, you know, standing aside and actually striking. So I am excited that they are getting back to the table because now that the writers are back, the ground floor has been laid for a lot of the AI stuff. And we will have links to the WGA West Twitter account that has like a breakdown of the things they won in the WGA deal, which includes like minimum for the writer's room, like minimum number of writers for the writer's room, as well as like pension things and like compensation for streaming and AI. They really did get all the major things that they were talking about. So hopefully the SAG-AFTRA will also be able to get a deal going since WGA already has. It feels like that door has been cracked open now.
Yeah.
And they just have to make sure that they're taking care of their members.
Mm-hmm. So. It's very good news. I was really happy to see that the writer's strike has ended. Unfortunately, SAG-AFTRA is the one who asked podcasters not to talk about struck projects, so we're waiting until those negotiations are finalized until we start talking about the show. Once that is done, we'll do an entire episode breaking down everything that's come out about the show so far and giving you all of our thoughts. It'll be very exciting. But until then, you know, we're just kind of waiting patiently. But like you said, the fact that WGA got a lot of what they wanted is huge for SAG-AFTRA too, because they were striking for like around 150 days or something like that.
I think it was like 158 or something like that. Yeah, it was a long
strike. That's a long time, but I'm really glad that it went through, and I'm thinking that the AMPTP will be a lot more open to what SAG wants because they've kind of already given in to the WGA, and they just want things back to normal, so hopefully they don't give these guys a runaround.
I think they had to settle the WGA part of this first. Since the WGA, like, struck first, it made more sense that they would get a deal first. And now that they've made concessions for WGA and they've agreed on terms, those terms are the bare minimum of what SAG-AFTRA will be looking for.
Right.
Is, you know, they'll take that as a bit of a guideline and then obviously adapt it for actors and performers rather than writers. But it is... It's all a step in the right direction, and I'm really, really hopeful that they'll be able to maybe reach a deal next week, and because if they are, that just means, you know, that means we may actually have a TV season.
Yeah.
And we can start talking about all the things.
Yes.
Because we really want to talk about all the things.
Yes. And there is a lot to talk about, so.
Yeah, so I will have Karen link in the show notes to, he's a comedian and a writer. His name is Adam Conover. I believe he was a strike captain. He's taken that off of his Twitter bio already. I think he was. He may not have been, but I've followed him for a while. He's a writer, and he's usually pretty reliable, and he has a really nice breakdown of the deal and all the things that they won in the deal. So I'll have her link that in the show notes, too, in case you guys are really interested in the specifics.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for hosting Kristen's Corner.
Welcome.
Okay, it is time to get into our main discussion today. We are talking about Chalice of the Gods, chapters 1 through 3, since those were the ones that were already out in the world prior to the book getting published. But of course, you know, Chalice is out now, so I've seen a lot of people have finished it. I've not quite finished it yet, but I'm getting close. And Kristen, of course, is following along with the podcast, so please, whatever you do, don't send us spoilers. If you really want to talk about spoilers with me, you can email, because that's easy for you to ignore.
I usually don't check the email. That's usually Karen. So, yeah, if you email spoilers, mark it as spoilers, label it, but Karen will more than likely be reading them.
Yeah. So let's jump right into this, because I feel like I have so many feelings. I have so many feelings.
So many big feelings.
Yeah. We're going to be switching off on chapters, but they're going to be structured like we've been structuring the Red Pyramid chapters. So first chapter today is chapter 1, I Get Flushed. And our recap is, it's his first day as a high school senior, and Percy's already getting mixed up with the Greek gods. I mean, the boy just has terrible luck, doesn't he?
Yeah, he really does.
First line of the book. Look, I didn't want to be a high school senior. I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with it. It was literally the perfect line to start this book. And Percy's voice is so loud. Like, I hear Percy. This is just... If anyone was worried about this feeling different or this not feeling quite like Percy, no. This is Percy through and through. Did you get a little shiver when you read that first line?
Yeah. It's so nice to be back in Percy's POV. It's been a while. And
yeah.
It was really, really nice to just, like, settle in. Like, oh, another Percy book.
Yeah. there's something very comforting about just stepping back into this world, in this place specifically, like, with the trio, you know? Like, yeah. I love Trials of Apollo, but that was very removed from Percy Jackson. This feels like really coming home to that first series. So, I do understand why they're calling it Percy Jackson and the Olympians number 6, but I still don't like it.
Yeah.
I also love that Percy is just over being a demigod. Like, he is so done with it, and it's exactly the attitude I expected from him. It's exactly the attitude I expect from him after everything that he's been through. And I just thought it was so hilarious. Like, he's so sarcastic, and he's so just like, ugh. Like, you think being a demigod sounds cool. Trust me, it's exhausting and dangerous. I just want to go to class.
Like, if I could just go to class?
Yeah. I just want to do my homework without having to worry about all this other stuff.
Oh, Percy.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, this is his first day at alternative high school.
And what a name, Rick.
Yeah.
What a name. I love it. It's so goofballs, but I love it.
It is. And I liked that it used to be an old elementary school, so, like, all the chairs are small, and there's, like, paintings on the wall, and it's
unicorn stickers on the fire extinguishers. Yeah. Yeah, like, there's stuff that has lingered behind after the clearing out of the elementary.
Yeah. But Percy lost his entire junior year because of what happened in Heroes of Olympus, and Alternative High School was the only school that would take him for his senior year and help him catch up so he could still graduate on time. So that's why he's going to be very busy, because yeah. He's basically pulling double duty in order to graduate on time.
Yeah.
I also have to say, shortening it to AHS... don't like it, because American Horror Story. Like, that's all I can think about when I see AHS.
True, true.
But it's so important for him to graduate on time, because he must go to New Rome University with Annabeth in the fall, or he'll die.
Yeah.
He will die.
Death.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
It's this or death.
Yep, pretty much.
Poor Percy.
Annabeth or death.
Aw, that rhymes.
Yeah. So, Percy gets called to the guidance office right away. I think he's had, like, one or two classes that morning already in the guidance office, which was hilarious. But he just kind of turns around and, you know, walks back from where he came and ends up in there and meets Eudora, who we find out pretty quickly is actually a Nereid. So, she is a water spirit, a sea spirit. And he doesn't realize this at first because of the mist. And I always think any talk about the mist is really interesting, because he specifically talks about how it can even fool demigods if you're not concentrating enough. And because he went in expecting a human guidance counselor, that's what he saw at first. And then he realized, like, the shape of her hair is actually because of the shells in her hair and that sort of thing. And I just thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I think her look is very interesting.
Yeah, like, it's not out there for a demigod to not see through the mist unless they know the mist is present. Like,
right.
It isn't until they kind of get an inkling that things are a little bit off that they start looking deeper, and that's when they can instantly see through it. But until then, even they can be fooled.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought this was a nice little first day twist. Not just the fact that she wasn't human and we found out, like, right away. It's very Mrs. Dodds. But the opposite of Mrs. Dodds, because she's actually trying to be helpful.
Yeah.
That is the biggest twist in this chapter, is she was actually trying to be helpful.
Shocker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She wasn't great at being helpful, but she was trying.
Yeah.
And that's what's important. I also wanted to mention that she's the one who has Blue Jolly Ranchers on her desk, and we know from the chapter titles that this is probably going to come back into play somehow, and it could be as easy as, like, at the end of the book. I don't remember exactly what chapter it is, but I think it was near the end, like, maybe he gets his recommendation letter and goes back to his guidance counselor or something like that, but
yeah.
Wanted to note the Blue Jolly Ranchers. Now, Percy finds out that to get into New Rome University, he needs all the normal stuff, like test scores, official transcripts, an up-to-date psychoeducational evaluation. Is that a thing?
Like, maybe that's the official term for it, but, like, it was not a thing when I went to college.
Yeah.
I did not have to be psycho-evaluated. There was nothing like that, but maybe that's a new thing. Like, if you, you know, are looking to go to college, like, they look for you to have, like, a psych eval done, not to check that you're crazy, but more or less, I would guess, to look for, like, behavioral issues or, like, anxiety-type things or learning disabilities that have gone maybe undiagnosed. I don't know if this is, like, a general thing, like, everyone does this now, or if this is just, like, a, well, you're a demigod who survived to this long in your life. We need to know that you're not crazy before we let you into New Rome University.
And it actually makes sense. So I just looked it up, and it says, psychoeducational evaluation is a process by which a trained professional works with those involved in a child's learning or development to identify the child's strengths and weaknesses. One, Percy has been a quote-unquote troublemaker, because unfortunately a lot of demigods are. And two, he has learning disabilities. He has ADHD and dyslexia and stuff. That's probably just to see where he stands, that they know how much help they have to give him when he gets to New Rome University.
That makes sense.
Yeah. He also finds out that the last requirement is 3 divine recommendation letters, and I don't think anyone was surprised by this, because we knew pretty much from the beginning that's what this book was going to be about.
Yeah.
And I loved how annoyed Percy was that he had to do new quests. He's like, after everything I've done for the gods, for all of the quests that I've done, they want me to do new quests? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was so funny. Also, maybe this is just me not knowing things, but she mentions, like, oh, yeah, you know, if New Rome University isn't a good fit for you, you can go to Hohokus Community College. I thought that this was another school for demigods, but it's real.
I assumed it was another demigod school that we hadn't heard of.
It's real. It's in New Jersey, and it's a trade school.
That is amazing.
Yeah. I was like, Hohokus Community College? That sounds like Hocus Pocus. Like,
see, is it like in Hoboken or something?
I don't know.
Because that would make some sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, that's how they spell it, is like capital H-O, capital H-O, K, capital K-U-S. So it definitely stands for something. Maybe everybody is laughing at us right now.
Right?
I had never heard of this. But I got really excited about the idea of, like, wait, so we have New Rome University, but we don't really know of any other demigod schools around the country. Could there be other ones?
I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, it would be really cool.
Just like, I mean, we know Camp Half-Blood and the other, like, we know those camps exist, Camp Jupiter, but we don't know that no other camp exists.
I think, we've heard about some things, like in Heroes of Olympus, I know that they traveled overseas and there were, like, other communities.
Yeah.
I don't remember specifically what they had talked about, but I would assume, like, there's gonna be, I mean, the Greek gods are in the United States. That's their, like, home territory, but that doesn't mean there aren't demigods all over the world.
Right.
So,
Yeah.
Very interesting, and just something that I wanted to bring up because I would love to learn more about the communities outside of those two places, outside of, like, California and New York, but also outside of the United States.
Agreed.
The last bit of this chapter is basically Percy being annoyed that his dad isn't the one explaining all of this to him, and I couldn't decide if the Nereid, if Eudora, was scared of Percy or of Poseidon, because she was, like, starting to melt, like, water was coming off of her. She looked very nervous as Percy was getting angry. And I was like, is Percy the kind of demigod who could, like, mess up a sea spirit? And, like, so she's genuinely afraid of him? Or is it just because she needs to make Percy happy, otherwise she might get fired, like, Poseidon might be mad at her?
I wanted to believe this was the Poseidon effect.
Okay.
And that she was just nervous to have to reach out to Poseidon after having volunteered for this job because she wanted to help. Like, I can see her being like, I didn't want to have to go to him this quickly, but sure, like, day 1, minute 5, I have to, you know, reach out to Poseidon. So I like to believe it was Poseidon and not Percy, but, I mean, Percy was, at least at the beginning, he wasn't sure she wasn't a monster.
Yeah.
So, like, he had Riptide out and was, like, ready to, like, let's go.
That's true.
Like, he was prepared to fight if this ended up being another monster, because his track record shows they're usually monsters. But, you know, it was pretty quick that he was able to figure out that she was a Nereid and not a monster after him.
Right.
So, like, I like to believe that it's Poseidon that's scaring her, but it very well could have been both, or Patty.
Yeah. I could see both. I could see her being worried about Poseidon, but also, like, it's not like Percy's not dangerous.
Right.
So, especially with Riptide.
Mm-hmm.
And was Poseidon eavesdropping? Because he's the one that calls Eudora. She doesn't reach out to him.
I mean, maybe he's just kind of always got an ear, and he
knew just in tune.
Well, and he knew she was going to be meeting with Percy that day, and maybe he wanted to know how it was going and just see what was going on. And yeah, maybe he had an ear to her shells.
Yes, maybe.
Using her oyster shells, I think, were like her hair.
Yeah, it was like a scalloped shell.
But like maybe he was just listening through her to try and get an idea.
That's so funny.
It's crazy.
And he basically tells her, I'll take it from here. And she flushes Percy into the ocean. Better than getting, you know, flushed in an actual toilet.
Right.
But still highly inconvenient.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay, as always, we are doing our favorite lines and favorite moments. And I'm sorry I had to take the first one. Look, I didn't want to be a high school senior.
It's good. It's solid.
It was really good. What was yours?
Mine is, like, from a paragraph later. So it's in that opening page. Like, I didn't even turn the page before. I already typed up my favorite line for the chapter. And it's also Percy saying, "Honest truth, most of the time, being a demigod blows chunks. Anybody who tells you different is trying to recruit you for a quest." And I just thought this was so Percy, and it's like, you know what? It does blow chunks.
He's so cynical, and he's not even 18 yet.
Like, he's over it.
Yeah.
Like, how am I not just done with this? How am I not getting written off for saving the world? Like, I just want to be a freshman in college next year and leave me be. Yeah.
That was so funny. My favorite moment was really hard to decide on because I kind of just wanted to be like the whole chapter because it was so nice just to be back with Percy.
Agreed.
But I have to say, I just really loved how over it he was about having to do new quests. Yeah. He was like, "Are you kidding me?
It's pretty
Haven't
much
I
best.
Done enough?"
It's pretty much the best. Yeah. I agree with you. I am totally on board for over it, Percy. I also loved the callback to the Mississippi River when he's talking about like the Nereid and he's like putting it together. And I just love that we're already getting a callback to a previous quest and, you know, all the things. And it just makes me happy because we're back and it's, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to move into chapter 2 entitled "My Dad Helps Out. No Actual Helping Occurs." In this chapter, Percy takes a quick trip to visit Poseidon so his dad can explain the details of these godly recommendation letters he needs for New Rome University. Okay, so first, my first note for this chapter is Poseidon's private plumbing system, trademark.
That was really funny.
Quality!
Yeah.
So Percy gets flushed out of the office, but he's flushed into Poseidon's private plumbing system. And it just, it's so Rick. It's just perfect. Beautiful Rick.
Yeah.
And I love that. So he's in his chair.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, like in this little plastic, you know, made for toddler's chair going through, and he is not at all bothered.
Yeah, he's just like, "Oh, really?
Like, I'll just go. Like, it's fine." And he's just like cruising through, breathing like normal, waiting to get there.
Not even trying to fight it.
Like, it's so, I can't. Like, I know it would be, like, an ancient, it would be an age before we ever saw any adaptation of this, but man, would it be so
it
great.
It would be really funny.
Like, oh, so good. He emerges on the seafloor. It's right outside Poseidon's summer villa, which is under renovations, because it always is under renovations, it feels like. We see blue whales toting marble columns, an infinity pool being built as we speak, and hammerhead sharks laying grout for coral brickwork.
Yeah.
The visual of watching a hammerhead shark use that front fin to, like, lay grout made me laugh so much. I don't even know.
I really liked, I think it was the dolphin that, like, gave him a high five while he was wearing, like, a safety vest.
Yeah.
That was so funny. And even Percy's comment about, like, what's the point of an infinity pool when you're underwater?
Like, it doesn't make any sense, yeah. But you don't say that to Poseidon. You just let him have what he wants.
Yeah.
Okay, so Poseidon is still rocking the same basic look as we've seen him in before. Cargo shorts, camp shirt that's a little seen better days, apparently.
Yeah.
It's got some Hello Kitty reference to it or something.
He said it was something about, I think it was like it was in a paintball war or something, and it was like pink and purple splotches.
Yeah.
I imagine it being like almost tie-dye and almost right. like something the party ponies would wear.
Like it's been worn and reworn so many times that it's just like barely recognizable. He's wearing socks and Crocs as well as his fishing cap, complete with all the lures that he always has. But he's still got that trident, and it is still radiating with power. So, you know, same old when it comes to Poseidon. They get to talking pretty quickly, though, and we learn that the recommendation letters are the only way the Olympian Council will allow Percy to work off his debt. What debt, you may ask? No, not student debt or any of... No, it's life debt. You see, Percy wasn't supposed to have ever been born. And because of that, he is ineligible for New Rome University. They are
like,
the Greek gods. It is a Roman university. Who are they to tell you how you can get in or not? I still don't understand, but they have a say, apparently.
I was like, are you kidding me? Like, he didn't ask to be born. Why is he having to do these quests? Poseidon should be the one doing the quest.
I mean, really. Yeah. Truly, yes. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's a little much. And Percy then, of course, relates this to, well, I've heroed quite a bit in the past. You know, I've saved the world multiple times against multiple crazy, huge, powerful gods. You think that would count for something? Apparently not. None of the heroing he's previously done will count for this. Zeus is a stickler for the rules. When it doesn't involve him. And he is making sure that Poseidon tells Percy that he has to do, you know, he has to do new quests in order to earn these recommendation letters. So Poseidon relays that Percy needs one letter from three different gods, so three letters total, and he is not allowed to ask the gods for these. They have to approach him, and then he has to complete a quest for them, and then they will write him a recommendation letter. And, of course, this makes no sense at all, but it's Zeus, so you just say, sure. And Poseidon wanted to help out, so because Percy's not allowed to ask, but he definitely needs them, Poseidon puts out an advertisement. And it says, Percy Jackson will do your quests in exchange for college recommendation letters. And apparently it's like, I want to say it was like orange paper, and at the bottom it had the little tear-off strips with his address on them, like you used to use for babysitting announcements. I used to put those up at my church, like when I babysat. I would put my name and phone number and email like on a little slip, and people would tear them off and call me when they needed a babysitter.
Yeah.
Poseidon did that for Percy, and I just think that is hilarious. It's the best thing ever. I can't even.
Oh my gosh. I feel so bad for Percy, though. Like, I understand why he's so upset, because this is just ridiculous. I mean, Poseidon did say that he talked Zeus down from 25 recommendation letters, but, like, I really want to make a Jason joke right now, but I'm not going to in honor of him. But, like, is Zeus gonna adhere to this if, like, Talia decides she doesn't want to be a hunter anymore and wants to go off to New Rome University? Or is he... Do the rules not... Because Zeus broke the rules, too.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just Poseidon.
No.
It's just... This is...
Well, and knowing Zeus as we do, I'm also curious if Nico is going to have to jump through hoops.
Right.
Now, he was born before the pledge was made.
That's true.
But then he was, like, hidden away.
Yeah.
And knowing Zeus as we do,
he'd want revenge for him being hidden away.
Like, he's going to be like, no, he's younger than Percy, which means that it totally counts, which means he has to go through this too. He's going to need him too. Like, would I say no to a series of Nico doing quests to get recommendation letters? No, I'm not saying no to that book series, but I don't think that's a thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, like, I can totally see Zeus holding Nico and Hades to that same thing, but obviously not himself. No,
right.
No. Definitely not himself. Sigh. So Poseidon believes that once Percy and Annabeth get into NRU, they will both be old enough that the monsters won't bother them so much anymore. So he's basically selling this as, I know you have to do this, I know you don't want to do this, but this is the thing you want. And once you get there, once you get it done, this might be the big change you're kind of looking for. And it's, like, I get it, and he's just trying to basically say, listen, there's nothing we can do. You have to do this if you want to go to NRU. Like, it's just how it is. Mm-hmm. But I do like that Poseidon knows just how important it is to Percy that he and Annabeth be together, and he knows that, like, moving into, like, adulthood and the monsters not being quite so prevalent will allow Percy to live a semi-normal life, and that is so appealing to a poor demigod child who's been doing nothing but saving the world for the last, like, right. 8 years of his life.
Yeah. This actually brought up a question in my mind, because do you think, because Rick has talked endlessly about the fact that Percy's not 18 yet. He's kind of perpetually 17 at this point, and he's not aging him up to 18 yet. Will he ever do it? Because this is kind of a good point, is once he gets into New Rome University, will the monsters pretty much leave him alone? Will he not really have as many adventures to go on? I think Rick could, like, make up adventures for him still, because there's going to be somebody who's still going to try him, or he could be helping Nico or something like that. But at the same time, him being 18 and going on adventures kind of steps him outside of that middle grade category.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if, like, he's not ever going to write anything with adult Percy, even if adult Percy is only, like, 18 years old.
I'm totally with you. I don't think we will ever get adult Percy books. This is just me prognosticating, so just smile and nod at the crazy girl. I think that the Chalice of the Gods and whatever, however many books Rick wants to write in this little mini series that comes after Percy Jackson and the Heroes of Olympus and all that, however many books he wants to write in that, I feel like this is, like, the goodbye letter to Percy as a main character.
No, that makes me sad.
I know, but I feel like he's giving him, like, one last set of adventures before he does turn 18, and I would not be surprised if when Rick has said, like, okay, this is the last one I'm writing in this little miniseries, this, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it ends with Percy turning 18 and feeling a difference in the amount of magic around him, or, you know, getting a epilogue where it's 3 months into his 18th year and he's like, it's amazing how many fewer monsters are chasing mm-hmm. me now. Like, I could totally see this ending with Percy being able to kind of walk off into the sunset and live a semi-normal life.
Yeah.
I do think that anything written in the Greek sphere in the future will involve grown-up Percy
being,
like, a mentor or being involved in somehow. Like, I can see him being involved in other books. They just will not be from Percy's perspective once he's 18.
Because we saw him, I mean, Trials of Apollo, he's already at New Rome University. And, like, he didn't play a major role, but, like, they went to his house, like, they showed up. And even in The Sun and the Star, which takes place after Trials of Apollo, they got to Iris message him and Annabeth, and they were studying and stuff like that, and maybe making out, we don't know. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think that it would make a lot of sense if Rick didn't write anything from Percy's point of view post New Rome University / 18 years old. I think that he could always go back and write something like this set in between if it really called to him. I think at this point, I mean, I'm so excited for these books, and I'm ready for more, but I'm also just as excited to explore other characters like we did with The Sun and the Star, and even just having Percy pop up for a couple of chapters is still going to mean something, even if he's not doing his own adventures, because this world is big enough, and we care so much about the side characters that seeing them go off on their own quests is a different kind of equally satisfying thing to watch as seeing Percy doing all of this.
Something that just kind of, like, dawned on me, and I do not think or know if this would ever be a thing Rick would entertain, but, like, what kind of abilities would a child of two demigods have?
So you're talking second gen.
Yeah. Like, if let's say 10 years down the line, 5 years down the line, Percy and Annabeth have graduated New Rome University. They've popped up in a book here or there, but they're side characters at this point. If they have a kid who all of a sudden is being chased by monsters and has to go to camp, like, that could be a really fun way to involve Percy and Annabeth without having them be the questers anymore.
Right.
Like, I could see a second gen book where we're learning what a child of two demigods is facing in the world, especially because his grandfather is Poseidon and his grandmother is Athena.
Yeah.
Like, that would be crazy. I would love to see what that means.
Yeah.
What kind of abilities they have, if they have any. Does a child of two demigods have to deal with any of this, or is it, you know...
I feel like I just read something recently. I want to say when I was doing research for something, I think it was... last week's episode, no, 2 weeks ago when we were talking about Chalice of the Gods and, like, where everybody had been, there was something about, there's, like, a specific name, I think, for a grandchild of a god. And I want to say their powers aren't as strong, or they're, like, not quite what it's like to be a regular demigod. But, I mean, Rick could change that. And
yeah.
I'm sure there are instances where, I mean, not a lot of demigods live to grow old enough to have children, but there's got to be more than just Percy and Annabeth.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I would want that book for a while, but I would definitely read it.
Way down the line.
Yeah. That could be something that he explores in, you know, a standalone book or a small trilogy or something like that. Yeah.
Like, I do think the idea of that is fascinating, to kind of figure out what being the child of two demigods means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there aren't a plethora of them in the world, so maybe it means something special or, what you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Having, being descendant from both lines of two different gods, like, maybe that... mm-hmm. causes
and
some weird thing.
Especially Poseidon and Athena,
right,
who are notorious rivals.
Yeah.
What would that be like inside one person?
Yeah.
That, like, would be fascinating.
So I'm not saying that that's even a thing he's even entertaining writing about, but I feel like that could be a really fun way to keep Percy and Annabeth involved in the series or the world without having them actually be questers at any point.
Right. Yeah.
So, who knows?
I agree.
But that pretty much wraps up this chapter, so we're going to do favorite lines and favorite moments from chapter 2. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was, "We demigods don't live long compared to the gods. To them, we're sort of like gerbils. Gerbils who get killed a lot." Which is so sad, but so funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mine is a little interaction between Poseidon and Percy. Poseidon says, "Percy." Percy says, "Hey." And then Percy's like, "We have deep conversations like that."
That was, like, my number two favorite
quote.
It's
so it's so quality.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I love them. Okay, so favorite moments, Karen.
Poseidon making that ad for Percy. That was so funny.
It's
and it just, like, went over his head while, like, Percy... like, he thought he did such a great thing.
He did.
And Percy was like, "Oh my god, I can't tell him I hate this. It's gonna kill him.
Like, how is this, like, a thing that I'm dealing with right now?" Like, thanks, Dad, so much. For me, it was the hammerhead sharks using their heads to lay grout. It's just a thing. Like, if you've ever watched a person lay grout with a trowel, imagining a hammerhead shark head doing it just makes me laugh beyond belief. I can't even tell you. All right, so that takes us to chapter 3.
Yeah, chapter 3, we complain about quests and decorative gourds. Excellent chapter title, I love that. In this chapter, it's dinner at the Jackson household with Percy, Sally, Paul, Annabeth, and Grover.
Woohoo!
And oh my god, Percibeth is back.
Super back.
Oh my gosh. There is just... there's something about the two of them.
I know.
That you just... like, we know everything that they've gone through. We've seen their relationship from the beginning. And it's so solid.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. And they're still so young. And I love their dynamic so much. And I especially love that Annabeth automatically volunteers to help Percy with his quests. And she'll hear no protests about it. It's just a given. And, like, Percy really doesn't want to involve her because she's got her own things going on and it could be dangerous. And he doesn't expect that out of her. But it's not even a question in her mind. She's just like, no, obviously I'm going to help you.
I mean, if it were reversed, Percy would be saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, Annabeth, if you have to do something, I'm not going to sit back and say, oh, have a nice time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm coming with you. I'm going to help you. If you don't need me for a specific portion of it, I'll step back and you can handle it. I'm not doing it because you can't do it. I'm doing it because I care, and I'm not making you do all this on your own.
Yeah, exactly. Percy also, in this moment, talks about how he never really wanted to date anyone else. And I thought this was a really interesting thing to say because we know that he had, like, some burgeoning feelings for Rachel and Calypso, but I don't think he ever really wanted to date them like he wanted to date Annabeth. And I just, there's also a line in here, too, that I wanted to read out because he says, no one knew me better or put up with me more or held me together as much as Annabeth. And I knew she could say the same about me because if I were slacking as a boyfriend, she would let me know real quick. And this makes me so happy for two reasons. One, because I feel like Percy is, like, really introspective and really aware of his relationship with Annabeth. Like, he's not taking it for granted. This isn't just, like, a high school fling or something. This is, like, literal high school sweethearts who go on to get married and spend the rest of their life together. Kind of like Rick and Becky. And we know that Percy and Annabeth's relationship is based on Rick and Becky's relationship. And so every time Percibeth is, like, on the page, I just think of the two of them. And it makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's really cute. I like to think that his feelings for Rachel and Calypso, the feelings for Rachel, I think, was mixed up in all of that weirdness that was going on with Rachel at the time. And she was trying to figure out what these, like, she kind of felt like she had feelings for Percy, but it actually was more of the oracle and the prophecies that were, like, mixing up in her head.
Right.
And, like, she was, you know. So I like to think that they were really always meant to be friends and that it was just both of them feeling something was amiss and they couldn't quite put their finger on it.
They had a connection, but it didn't necessarily mean it had to be a romantic connection.
Agreed. Like, totally platonic.
I will stand by saying that I think that they had good chemistry, but it's Percibeth. Obviously,
well,
I'm going to root for them.
There are plenty of people who have great chemistry who are friends.
Yeah.
Like, it happens in Hollywood all the time. Like, if you fell for every leading lady, if every leading man fell for every leading lady they worked with, they would constantly be changing relationships.
Yeah.
Like, chemistry is a thing, but it's not everything.
Right.
And I also, like,
that is a very healthy thing to say and to share with our audience, I will just say.
Just saying. And I also think that Calypso, as much as she was very real to him on the island, is kind of like having a celebrity crush.
And that was almost like a trauma bond to me,
yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Like, it's like, she's a little bit unattainable. Like, she's attainable, but she's also unattainable. And I think it was always like, I definitely have a thing for her, but I don't think he ever was like, she's a person I can see me spending time with,
yeah,
in my life with. Like, Annabeth has always been the one that he's like, she is it. She is the kind of person I want to spend time with and be around all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other two, he definitely had some mixed feelings and didn't know what was going on, but, like, in the end, it's all Annabeth all the time.
Yeah, definitely. Because their pulses align as they hold hands.
I mean,
he's got it.
He does.
I love it.
It's so cute.
Now, we have a little bit of mystery surrounding Annabeth in this chapter because Percy asked how her first day at her own school went, the School of Design, New York City, but she kind of dodges the question. This felt kind of ominous to me. Do you have any guesses of what's going on?
I thought it just went so well, she didn't want to brag.
Oh. Okay.
That was my first inclination, was she loved it so much. It's everything she's ever wanted in a non-demigod school.
Right.
Like, obviously, New Rome University is going to be a step in a different direction.
Yeah.
But, like, as far as being able to really focus on architecture and design and figuring out, you know, like, I feel like this is more leaning towards Annabeth's strengths as opposed to, like, normal school ever mm-hmm. was. So I had a feeling that this was just, like, it was a great first day, and considering Percy's was such crap, she didn't want to rub salt in a wound.
Yeah.
And so she just kind of was like, oh, you know, like, we'll get to that later. Like, we'll talk about that later. Just kind of change the subject.
Would salt in Percy's wounds hurt him?
It's a good question. He's used to that salt water. It may not have hurt him at all.
Yeah.
But I do, reading it back and, like, seeing that you kind of took it ominously, I can see that angle, too. Yeah. Something may have gone wrong.
Yeah. Because I'm very curious, because we know that these books, like, this book is pretty short. It's, like, 280 pages or something like that. He wanted to keep it as short as the original series. And the books are about Percy's quest. It's not, like, I thought it was about the trio's quests or Percy and Annabeth's quest. It's not. This is strictly for Percy because he should never have been born. And he's being punished wrongfully. But so, I don't know if she'll have her own side plot where, like, something's going wrong, or if you're right, like, maybe I just read into it and it's actually like, yeah, it went really well. I don't want to brag to Percy and make him feel worse about getting flushed on his first day.
Literally.
Yeah. Also, Annabeth and Paul being, like, BFFs was so adorable.
And the fact that they, like, bonded over Shakespearean stuff because she needed help with an English.
Yeah, it said last spring he tutored Annabeth in some impossible English project. Is this a reference to Heroes of Olympus? Because I don't remember anything about this.
I don't remember either, but it's possible. Gosh, it's been so long since I've read Heroes of Olympus. I'm not remembering all the details. Like, I'm trying to remember, like, with Percy having lost so much time, like, there's pockets of things that we may never have heard of.
Right.
So maybe this just kind of fits in
all
of those.
Yeah, that's what I couldn't decide, is if it was a reference to something else or if he's just filling in some space.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anybody remembers, let us know, because it's going to be a while till we figure out the answer to this, and I don't know if we'll even remember we asked this question by the time we get to Heroes of Olympus.
We'll see.
Yeah. But them always talking in, like, Shakespearean English with each other was just, and, like, Sally's obsessed with it too, and just, I love that. Like, that's her future father-in-law right there. And the dynamic with the four of them is just so adorable.
Like, they're a little family unit. Yes. It all works. She's, you know, nobody's under any inclination to, like, run her off. Or, you know, like, they know that this is just the future. This is how things are going to be. And I love that Paul slips right in. Like, you know, like, Sally is his mom, but Paul being there too, it just, it's perfect.
And him being open about talking about the Greek gods and her being the daughter of Athena, like, it's just nice that there aren't any secrets in that sort of thing. By the way, I was super confused because I was like, wait, where's the baby? Like, why isn't the baby in here? And then I realized this, it must be before. Yeah. So I wonder if either this book or this trilogy will end with the announcement that Sally's pregnant.
It might.
Yeah, because we saw her in Trials of Apollo. So,
yeah.
But it took me a second to be like, oh, wait, this is before
that.
Wait
a minute. Yeah.
Again, Percy's just very introspective in this chapter in particular. He's happy that his mom is happy, but sometimes he feels a little bit left out. And then he also feels a little bit bad that he's got one foot out the door, that he's about to go across the country to live in California. And it just feels like, this is not the first time that I'll probably say this, and it's not the first time that I felt it, but he just feels so mature in this moment, and, like, he's really growing up, and he's really kind of taking stock of everything and everyone around him. Partially, I think that is because of everything that he's gone through, and partially, I kind of feel like that's Rick talking to us about the fact that he's revisiting this time and he's looking at these characters that he spent so long with and really appreciating them. I kind of felt that through the book.
I started giggling as you were saying that because, yeah, Percy does feel older, more mature, and it's, and part of that jadedness is that maturity.
Yeah.
Like that you're starting to see the world, you're starting to see a bigger picture. It's not just every day going to school all the time. Like, Percy's starting to plan and look ahead and try to figure, you know. And so part of, with that comes that little bit of jadedness of, like, I'm so ready to be done with all of this.
Yeah.
Like, by the time you hit your senior year of high school, you're like, okay, senior year's gonna be great. I'm excited to celebrate with my friends, but can I really just move on? Like, right. I want to go do things and be in the world and have a life and not have to be answering to my teachers for 8 hours a day. And it fits right in with where Percy is right now, and I love that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. He's definitely still cynical. He's still sarcastic. He's very introspective and mature, but at the same time, like, I see the old Percy in there still. Oh. It's not like he grew out of that part of it, which I really liked. I also really loved that he said, if I had to choose between being with Annabeth and, well, anything, that was no choice at all. Got a bad.
Mm-hmm. He's
got
it, he so totally bad. He totally does. He totally does.
And then, trumpets. Grover Underwood arrives.
Pan flutes.
Pan flutes.
We do not trumpet.
I'm sorry. Well, I was going to try to do the trumpet, and then I realized that would have just been embarrassing.
I'll do it. I don't care. I have no shame.
Do pan flutes.
I have no idea what pan flute sounds like.
No clue.
I'm guessing Eric, Prince Eric in Disney Dreamlight Valley, like,
yeah.
That's gotta be like a pan flute.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be like flutey. Can you sound like, we're both wiggling our heads back and forth like we're playing the pan flute?
I mean, it's like a harmonica, but pan flutey.
Yeah.
Like, instead of, yeah, I don't
know. So it's just the sound of you blowing into your
right?
hand.
Like, well, because, like, my heart wants to, like, pretend to play a flute,
right.
But that's a totally different thing, and
yeah.
There's no way to, like, because it's like, like,
that kind of sounds like a trumpet, too, though.
It's, but, I mean, when you blow into a flute,
yeah.
You're blowing in a weird way where you can't make that shape with your mouth
yeah.
and make any noise other than, like, it's just air. You're not making any hum,
oh.
even if you hum while you do it.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yes,
okay.
Hand flutes, whatever.
Yeah. That bit went longer than
tangent.
I thought it would. Anyway, Grover Underwood is there. I was so happy when he arrived.
In the house, literally.
Yeah. He has stopped wearing pants. That's the new development with Grover. He no longer wears pants. And he says that if anybody asks, he just says he's wearing athleisure wear.
It sounds like his fur is just so curly and big.
Yeah.
That he officially looks like a satyr from, like, any movie
right.
where they just have these, like, fur pants.
Yeah.
And so he just goes for it. And I love it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I love it. It's
thank
so
goodness
good.
For the mist, because otherwise people would be real concerned.
But he still wears sneakers.
He does, because the clopping's just a little too much.
Like, they can only do so much.
Yeah, the mist cannot take care of the clopping.
Well, and I think they mentioned, like, tap shoes along with athleisure wear is just too much for
yeah.
anybody to handle, so we're just gonna give him tennis shoes. He's gotta wear those.
Oh my god, I've got, like, tears in my eyes. This is just so funny to me.
It's good.
Oh, it's great. They also make mention, there's this little note in here that I thought was really interesting. Once demigods graduate high school, they transition into the regular world, which we've heard before. That's not surprising. But that kind of means, like, Percy specifically says this was his last year at Camp Half-Blood, which means that he won't go back there anymore. Now, was Luke the oldest camper that we ever saw at Camp Half-Blood? Because didn't we figure out he was, like, older than 18? Like, he was 18 or 20? So I find that to be particularly interesting. Was he not
yeah.
able to transition into the real world?
That's a good question. I mean, part of me wants to think that it's not, like, a mandatory thing, like, you are never allowed back at camp. Like, I don't think it's like that.
It's just highly encouraged.
Right. Like, they want you to go and live your life because Camp Half-Blood is there to be a haven for kids who are being chased by monsters and need somewhere to go to escape and
somewhere
to be able
safe.
To be kids. And so, yeah, like, Camp Half-Blood is that safe haven. And, like, being that there are not 10,000 children of Poseidon hanging around, Percy could probably go to Camp Half-Blood at any time and stay in that cabin and nobody's going to bother him.
Yeah,
but I like to think that this just means, like, you are not required, or, like, you going to Camp Half-Blood is not, like, a you must show up every summer, or, you know, you show up every summer because you have to, and, like,
right.
Now he can probably, like, visit and be a little more free with mm-hmm. his time.
Because I was thinking, like, Percy going back and teaching in the summer or something like that. I mean, it would depend on, one, he could do that while he was at New Rome University, because if he has the summers off, he could go, you know, help the younger demigods, which would be an interesting story, too. And depending on the career he has, if he could, like, volunteer on weekends or something, like, I feel like Percy could still go back. And out of, like, all of the demigods, at least in the current era, his knowledge and expertise and experience would be the one most useful to the demigods coming up.
I could almost see him having, like, a, not an actual job there, but, like, Chiron maybe keeping him on as, like, somebody who could negotiate between, like, water spirits.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, since he has such a connection to the ocean and to water, like, I could see Chiron saying, like, hey, if we're having major issues with, you know, things in the lake or in the ocean and the sound, like, we'll reach out to you. Like, maybe he's not there all the time, but he checks in every month and makes sure things are going smoothly. And, yeah, because he does. He has a lot of skills that are useful to the kids. And if... You know, they had adult counselors that came in all the time. I mean, they had the one guy, Mrs. O'Leary, who I can never remember.
His name Quintus?
Quintus, yeah. Like, they had adult counselors that came in and helped, so maybe he kind of moves into that sort of thing occasionally.
I can even see him doing, like, a monthly program where he does something, like, teaches them, you know, aquatic skills or something like that. I think that would be really cool.
Swimming lesson.
Yeah, right? I would love that so much.
Aww.
Like I said, Percy is sounding very introspective, very wistful in these chapters, and he's just happy to have family dinners. I was like, man, he's so grown up, but also this kind of hit me too, because I, like, sitting down for a family dinner was not a thing that I ever really did. My parents divorced when I was young. It was basically me and my mom, and we would, you know, eat in front of the TV and stuff like that. I never had, like, structured family dinners. And so whenever I get a chance to, like, do those, either with your family, which was, like, a big thing when I first moved here, or with my boyfriend's family, it, like, it really means something to me. And, like, this hit me really hard because he talked about how his childhood was a little bit, like, crazy when he was younger, and how it wasn't super structured, and with Gabe in the picture, like, it just wasn't a good time. And so the fact that he could have these very positive family dinners now, especially right before he's leaving, you could see, like, how hard that hit him.
Yeah. Yeah. As someone who had, like, growing up as a child, we ate at the dinner table every night until probably middle school, and then we all had so many activities, like, we didn't eat at the table anymore. It was grab what you can when you can kind of thing. And so, yeah, like, that, there is something extra special about getting back together with the fam to, like, do a dinner, and I can see that for Percy here. Like, he never thought this was going to be a possibility. When his mom was dating Gabe, and he hated Gabe, and he didn't understand why his mom was with him, and it didn't make any sense to him. And now, seeing her truly happy, and seeing Paul be awesome, and get along with Annabeth, and, you know, welcome Grover, and, you know, it's just, it's such...
And his lack of pants.
Like, Percy, at 12 years old, could not imagine this at all. And so, I think he's just so happy that everything is going well for everybody. Like... He wants this to continue. He knows that he's got to eventually move out and do his own thing and be an adult, which is just everybody at ages, like, 17 and 18.
Yeah.
You start thinking about all the things that are coming that you don't want to do, but you have to do because it's what you do.
And just so you know, even when you're 35 years old, you still hate adulting, in case anybody is wondering.
It's not fun.
It's super not fun.
You really don't want to make appointments and talk to people.
I avoid it at all costs.
But yeah, I really think it's extra special for him here, because he never envisioned this as a possibility.
Yeah.
And so now that it's a reality, and his mom gets to be truly happy and just is really enjoying her life, I think it just hits him extra hard.
I'm getting all emotional again. I love this so much.
Aww.
Speaking of his mom,
Her first novel will be published in the spring.
Yay, Sally!
How cute is that? I love it. I love Rick's notes about, like, she didn't make a ton of money from it, but it's still really exciting, and she's still scared and, like, all this other stuff, and I'm like, that's what writing a book is like.
Yep, yep.
Pretty much, yeah. We also get a good update on Grover. He is working on the Council of Cloven Elders, and he's sending satyrs all over the world to check out catastrophes in the wilderness. I believe we get a bit of this in Trials of Apollo because we check in with him and kind of knew that he was doing all of this. But I could not help but think how great of a standalone novel this would make. Can you imagine getting a standalone Grover novel? It would be so good because as much as we see the dryads and the nereids and the satyrs and stuff throughout the books, we never really focus on them all that much, but to have them be the main part of a story, I think would be fascinating.
Well, and with all the craziness going on in the world, naturally,
yes.
Like, seeing Grover trying to, like, deal with that and trying to help the different nereids and dryads, whatever, deal with the changes that are coming and, like, the wildfires and the hurricanes and, you know, like, I feel like this could be a massive series. Like, he could do a standalone. He could do a whole Grover series. He could, you know, there's so many possibilities with Grover here. And I would love to, at the very least, get a standalone Grover novel and really spend time with him and the nature spirits and see how all of that works.
Yeah. I love that you brought up all of the wilderness stuff because one of my favorite, like, subgenres is that, like, eco-fiction or something like that, where I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but T.A. Barron's Merlin series was, like, as big to me as Harry Potter. Like, that was a hugely influential book on my life, and a lot of that is about taking care of nature and how nature is important and how, you know, the wilds are kind of disappearing and, like, what all of that means. And that, like, I grew up with my dad really teaching me about nature and, like, appreciating it and stuff, but the books that I read reflected that as well, and that's always been something I really love, and I love reading books about, like, spooky forests and, like, all that kind of stuff, whether it's paranormal or not. And I think that if Rick wanted to, this is kind of a shift in gears, and I think this could potentially be, like, a thing. But if he wanted to write books showing kids how to take care of the wild and, yeah, talking about fires that affect thousands and millions of people and all of that, Grover would be a great voice to do that through.
Absolutely.
I don't know if Rick would want to take on something that big because it could end up being a huge thing, but I would read the heck out of a series like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it would be thoroughly, like, engrossing. Grover as a character, as much as, like, we love him as Percy's bestie, is one of the few that I think we really dove deep into the least.
Yeah.
Like, we know Grover, but we don't know Grover. Mm-hmm. And so getting a chance to, like, get into Grover's head and figure out what it means to be a satyr and how that connection to the wild really works.
We know him in conjunction with Percy.
Yeah.
We don't know him as well as an individual.
Agreed. Yeah. And so, like, seeing him on his own, doing his thing, focusing on his priorities and not just working with the demigods to get things squared away so that the world doesn't end, but instead trying to keep his world alive.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would be an absolutely fascinating series. Definitely would check it out.
Yeah,
sure.
That would be really
also
cool.
How many standalone / new series can we come up with before the end of Chalice of the Gods?
So many good ideas.
Like, I think we've had, like, 4 already in this episode. And that's, like, it's gonna be a thing.
Yeah, definitely gonna be a thing.
So, Rick, if you need any help coming up with ideas, you know.
Just let us know. We won't even... I'll accept no financial compensation.
Just send us a copy.
Yeah, just send me a copy in advance. That's all I will settle for that.
That sounds
good. If Disney wants to pay me, though, I mean, I'll take all of their money.
Absolutely.
So, at the end of this chapter, Grover does exactly what Annabeth did, which was volunteer immediately to help Percy with his quests. Just like old times, Grover says. And remember, he kind of said that in the elevator, too, at the end
of...
It
feels like old times.
Yeah. So, I really loved that parallel, and I really loved that Grover, who has also grown up a lot and has become a lot more outwardly courageous,
I love that he's ready to delve into this with Percy.
Well, and we've only seen him for a few seconds, really.
Yeah.
But he just feels more confident. Like, mm-hmm. before, Grover definitely had no idea what was going on. He wanted to save Pan, but he wanted to help the demigods. And he had, you know, like, he was still dealing with the Council of Cloven Elders. And now he's on the Council. He is the Council in those ways. So it's like, Grover has matured so much and is so much more confident in his role in the world and as a leader, and I'm really excited to see how that translates to him working with Percy and Annabeth. Like, he's not going to be the skittish, you know, I'm sure there's still a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But he's not quite the scared, skittish little satyr who's afraid of his own shadow sometimes, and, you know, he'll probably eat tons of tin cans, but, you know, like, I'm really excited to see him in a very, like, we talked about Percy being so much more mature, but Grover's kind of giving me that, too.
Yeah.
Annabeth has always had this very otherworldly maturity to her, and so that fits right in, but I am really, really intrigued to see what that means for Grover.
Mm-hmm. I saw Becky tweeted something about how we have to wait till the show to really understand this, but that Arian's voice is very loud in this book. So, like, this is, like, Arian's Grover, basically.
Ooh.
Which is going to be really interesting to see.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
I really like it, too. Okay, favorite lines and favorite moments. Why don't you go first on this one?
So, Karen already read my favorite line, but
I know,
it's okay.
Sorry.
It was so good. It had to... I understood what you did. And so, I'm going to read it again just because it's wonderful. And it's from Percy about Annabeth, and he says, "Still, no one knew me better or put up with me more or held me together as much as Annabeth, and I know she could say the same about me, because if I were slacking as a boyfriend, she would let me know real quick."
Yeah.
And it's just, it's perfectly them.
It is.
They know each other, they know each other's quirks, they are 100% on board with, you know, who the other is, and they are not the kind of couple that's gonna just, like, shove mistakes under the rug. Like,
right.
Annabeth's gonna let Percy know when he screws up, and Percy's gonna tell Annabeth when she's driving him crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they do. It's part of why they work.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just really love that quote.
Mine made me laugh out loud in this chapter. Oh my gosh. So Grover says, "Are you kidding me?" He grinned at Annabeth. "A chance to do quests, just the three of us, like old times, the Three Musketeers." "The Powerpuff Girls," Annabeth suggested. "Shrek, Fiona, and Donkey," I said. "Wait a minute," Grover said. "I'm fine with this," Annabeth said. So funny. He's the donkey.
And I love that this makes Percy Shrek. Like Annabeth's like, "I'm fine because I'm the Fiona." So it's totally fine. But you're Shrek and you're donkey. So, you know, like, that's just perfect.
Oh, man. That was just a great exchange. I loved it.
Fantastic.
What was your favorite moment?
Because I read that moment with Annabeth and the School of Design, I read it as her hiding her excitement.
Mm.
I liked that she was being extra sensitive to Percy's feelings in that moment. That's how I interpreted it. And that she was just, like, she knew that Percy was facing not only a giant, you know, pain of a school year, but also now he's got this godly problem to deal with as well. Like, she just really didn't want to rub his nose in the fact that things are working out for her. If that is not what's going on and something happened at school for Annabeth and we find out about that later, I almost like that even more because it means that she was willing to set aside whatever that was and help Percy with this and say, like, that's not time sensitive. That can be dealt with later.
Right.
I will ask his help for that later, but I'm not distracting him from what we need to do now. Like, it's very Annabeth. And
right.
So, yeah, I just really liked that she is still the very mature, you know, has it all together Annabeth, and will, you know, get to that later if that's what that is.
Yeah. My favorite moment was just the way Annabeth and Grover didn't even hesitate to help Percy get those recommendation letters. I mean, they're just ride or die for Percy, and this trio is so solid for such a good reason, and I love that it is like old times, and I love that, you know, they don't really know what they're going up against or who they have to deal with, but it's no question. They're going to help Percy no matter what.
Yeah. They're... It's so cute.
Yeah.
By the way, this is, aside for the listeners, you copied your favorite moment into my blank.
Oh, I did?
For the last one. And I was like, I could just leave it and see if she has to come up with another one. Because that's really the favorite moment. I mean, like, knowing that they were both willing to just jump in it, I was like, I will totally take this upon.
I was like,
no, I'll just give it to... I moved it up to yours. And I was like, all right, I'll fill in something else. Thanks. But I really thought about leaving it because I was like, this will just be funny.
Yeah. So that is the end of the first three chapters of Chalice of the Gods. What do you think so far?
It's a return to form. It's, you know, it feels like Percy, Annabeth, and Grover. And I love that we've already gotten to check in with Sally and Paul and get a, you know, a feel for that too. And we've already seen Poseidon. And did I, you know, there's a lot of things that feel just fun and familiar about this. And I know that it's just going to get crazy and fun and we're going to keep, you know, it's going to be new too, but I love the return to the familiar.
Yeah. It feels really good to be back here with them. It feels like an old Percy Jackson book. The voice is as strong as ever. And I think, you know, it just ties everything together. It's old, but it's new at the same time. Something borrowed, something blue. I don't know why that... Okay, not wedding bells yet, but, you know, maybe soon. But, yeah, I'm really, really happy with it so far, and I am very invested in the outcome of this book and whatever comes next.
Also, the easiest 25 pages I've ever had to read.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, first three chapters were about 25 pages, and I was like, that went really fast.
It did.
Like,
was it hard to stop?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. But it's okay. We'll get through it.
It'll be worth it.
Get through it. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at subjectifymedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. Tune in to Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show Wolfpack is currently getting the same treatment. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. And please remember, we are keeping it spoiler-free while we read Chalice of the Gods. So if you have spoilery thoughts, maybe send those to the email so Karen can keep an eye on them. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is really helpful. You can leave questions, comments, ideas for content, or episodes you want to hear from us in any of these places, and we will get back to you as soon as we can. We do have a little bit of feedback this week, so I will throw it back to Karen for that.
Yeah, on Twitter, at RachelJoy23 replied when I was asking about our, you know, any feedback or anything, any thoughts about the discussion of Chalice of the Gods. And Rachel said, first of all, did anyone else try to fit the opening line of the book into the tune of the first song from the Lightning Thief musical? Because I know I did. I don't remember that song off the top of my head, but now I really want to go back and listen to it because that would be hilarious. And I feel vindicated because Rachel also says, also, does anyone else think Annabeth is hiding something about her new school in this scene, or am I overthinking things? Maybe you are overthinking things, because I often overthink things, but it was the scene that we were talking about, so now I'm really curious to find out what happens, and if she is hiding something.
Part of me is wondering if there's, like, is somebody we know that's not her favorite person also at the school? Like, who could it be? Like, my brain's starting to kind of try to bounce around and, like, figure it out.
Yeah.
So I'll have to give that some thought as we keep reading. Like, is there... is someone from the past, have they kind of popped up and are making her life difficult? Or, you know... Because it could be ominous. It really could.
It could be. We'll have to find out, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that pretty much wraps us up here. Next week, we'll be trudging forward with our Chalice of the Gods discussion. So we'll be doing chapters 4 and 5, and Karen is going to regale us with all of the details of the Chicago stop of the Chalice of the Gods tour.
And I think Rick's interview will be in that episode.
Ah.
But, you know, don't hold me to that. Sometimes that takes more editing, so we'll...
So there may or may not be a little discussion with Rich.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. It'll be here soon.
Definitely. All right. Until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.